This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Good day, everyone. I'm Ron Insana, Senior Advisor to Schroders North America, here to talk this week about the fixed income markets, where not only treasury rates are rising, but credit spreads continue to tighten. What does that mean for the investment outlook? What does it mean for credit markets? What does it mean in some ways for the economy overall? Joining me now is Lisa Hornby, Head of U.S. Multi-Sector Fixed Income. Lisa, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Ron.
All right, let's start first just with the yield on the 10-year note. It has been trending higher of late, although at the beginning of the week we saw a little pullback in yields because of the downdraft in the stock market. When you look at Treasury rates right now, what essentially are they telling you?
Well, I think they're telling you a couple of things. First, over the last couple of months, there's been an increased prospect of fiscal stimulus. Of course, the timing and the actual day of passage is unknown, but there did seem to be progress, and the market was certainly trading up on that. The second element is that there's been more consolidation around a Biden presidency and potential blue sweep, and the size of that stimulus package has increased in terms of the market's expectations. So more fiscal stimulus led to higher rates in the back end and steeper rate as well. And I think the third element of it is just the economic data holding up in the face of COVID. Obviously, now we're seeing renewed lockdowns and rising hospitalizations again. But in the lead up to this point, the economic data had generally been exceeding on the upside, particularly in the U.S. market. So I think it's a combination of those three factors that have led us to where we are.
Let me ask about that last piece, the economic recovery. I mean, I've taken a look at the personal income data since March, and were it not for federal transfer payments, income would have been down and spending probably would have been flat to slightly weaker. In the absence of a stimulus plan, now that the Senate's gone home and we won't see a plan agreed to or worked on before the election, and maybe not even till January, is the fourth quarter economy at risk even as the third quarter rebounds?
Well, I think you're right that the stimulus payments have certainly been what's kept spending up at the levels that it has. I think the fourth quarter becomes a bit more of a question mark. I mean, clearly we had the largest or one of the largest single downdrafts in Q2, followed by one of the largest single upticks in GDP data in Q3. I think Q4 will be still, we're still in recovery phase, but it won't be as strong as the third quarter was. I mean, we do have some positive momentum coming into this. Savings rates in the U.S. are still elevated around 14% or so, clearly coming off the peaks at, I think we hit north of 30% at one point during the crisis. So there is still some buffer here. We're still seeing new jobs being created, or should I say people being put back to work. But clearly we're in a bumpier part of this recovery phase. And the longer we go without stimulus, the harder that becomes.
So when we look around the world, not only do we see real yields remaining negative in the United States, but we've got close to $17 trillion worth of sovereign debt carrying negative yields around the world. That's near the peak of August 2019. Will we see this continue going forward?
I mean, I think that central banks around the world have basically committed to low rates below, you know, essentially, if they keep rates at zero, that essentially commits them to negative real yield. So I think we're in this environment for a long time to come. I mean, I was just looking at Fed funds futures pricing this morning, and the market is basically in line with the Fed dots, which suggests no hikes through 2023. So if you believe that the Fed is credible, if you believe that they will be able to generate at least some level of inflation, then you should expect to see negative real yields for several years to come.
Now, with respect to the recent pop-up in the 10-year yield and the 30-year yield, the Fed has kicked around but has not suggested this is a near-term issue. But they have discussed yield curve control. If we were to see, because of, let's say, the size of a very large stimulus package or maybe even a little further uptick in the economy, the yield on the 10-year approaching 1%, Would the Fed start thinking about capping rates along the curve?
I mean, that's certainly something that they've talked about. I think they're probably comfortable with some level of steeper curves. I think they're cognizant of the fact that flat to impair the banking system, something they were grappling with a couple of years back. We've somewhat almost quietly retraced to the steepest levels in 530s over the last the last few days, actually. I think they're probably okay with this. I think that they become maybe more concerned if we get a very, very aggressive move higher in yields, particularly in the long end, very rapidly, and it starts to dislocate credit and risk markets. That's where I think you could start seeing that conversation of yield curve control come back. But if risk markets are doing okay, if the curve is just gradually steepening and rates are just gradually ticking higher, I think they're okay with that environment.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
All right, so you mentioned credit, and it's done extraordinarily well. I mean, high-yield debt has now seen spreads narrow to almost pre-pandemic levels, if not pre-pandemic levels. We've seen the credit markets themselves, generically speaking, outside of treasuries, perform pretty well, even though there are concerns about defaults, even though there are concerns about economic growth. What do you make of this narrowing in spreads that we've seen over the last several months?
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it. It's been extraordinary because there's been so much fiscal and monetary stimulus. I mean, you look at the chart of real yields in the U.S., going negative, increasingly negative, and you overlay that with the S&P returns, and it's almost a one-for-one chart. And I think it's just a story that we've had so much liquidity injected into markets, I think nearly $20 trillion if you add everything up, that liquidity has had to find a place to go, and it's gone into risk assets. In terms of, you know, whether or not this will continue, I certainly don't think that the pace of the recovery in terms of asset prices will continue. You know, you look at valuations now, we're back to around median levels. There's still a lot of uncertainty on the horizon. And it becomes a little bit harder to see where the easy money is from here. Certainly, there are still some sectors that look cheap. You mentioned high yield. When you look at double Bs versus triple Bs, that's one area that still screens a bit cheap to us. Certain pockets of the investment grade corporate market still look attractive. Obviously, the COVID sectors are still trading relatively cheap compared to where they were before. So there are still some pockets. It's just that they're not as easy as they were before. You know, basically March, April timeframe, you could have bought almost any bond in the index and done very, very well. That easy money is behind us now.
Yeah, let me ask about that. When you look forward, not just is the easy money behind us, but there's been some speculation that, you know, looking into 2021, because there's been forbearance in various types of debt markets, because there's been, you know, forbearance without forgiveness, that we could see potholes in the credit markets in 2021 when some of this begins to unwind, the delaying of rent payments or mortgage payments or things like that. Are there areas that concern you because of that we've simply just pushed off any potential credit market problems into the next year?
Certainly in some areas that's the case. I think many, you know, I primarily work in the investment grade corporate market. I think for the most part, investment grade corporates have large cash war chests, not all of them, but many of them. In fact, the record issuance that we saw occur in Q3 and significant issuance we saw occur in Q2, much of that actually is retained on company balance sheets, just waiting for either a rainy day and more uncertainty with regards to COVID, or actively looking to pay down debt, to do liability management exercises where they're taking out more expensive debt and reissuing it at lower yields. So there are companies out there that are doing the right things that actually have the cash to withstand these pressures. But certainly there are sectors that are much more stressed as a result. You know, obviously, we haven't seen the service side of the economy rebound nearly as much as we'd like, given the fact that the disease is still out there and lingering. But yeah, I mean, this is not a market you could paint with a broad brush and say everything's fine. There's certainly pockets of weakness.
Let me ask you about just the things that could go wrong in any fundamental outlook for not just treasuries, but I mean credit more broadly. Are there things that you're keeping an eye on most directly that could alter your thesis about how certain fixed income assets perform?
Yeah, so I mean the things that we're thinking about are vaccine deployment. You know, when we think about what gets the U.S. economy back to a more normal place, that is one of the major components. In a lot of ways, we are really looking for that to happen in order to get back to continue this cyclical recovery that we're in. I think that's what answers your previous question in terms of forbearance and various aspects of the rental market and things like that. So the timing of this, the efficacy of it, those are all questions to come. Other things, you know, we're thinking about, obviously, the U.S. election and what that means for markets.
All right, Lisa, thanks very much. Appreciate your insights on the credit markets. Lisa Hornby, head of U.S. multi-sector fixed income. I'm Ron Insano with the U.S. Lens. We'll be talking to you again soon. Enjoy the rest of the week. And we are just a week away from the election, so expect maybe a little volatility over the next several days.
That was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to read more about any of the subjects we've spoken about in these shows, go to schroders.com/insights. You can listen to a whole back catalogue at schroders.com/the investor download. If you want to get in touch with us, it's schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Feel free to pose any questions. And if you want to rate, review and subscribe to us, you can do that via Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, with new shows available on a Monday and Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. But most importantly, keep safe and go well. Cheers.